Thanks so much for downloading Man Made. Just a heads up that the following episode contains some strong language and we do discuss mental health issues. If any of it strikes a chord with you and you want to find mental health support where you live or talk about your feelings, visit the Hub of Hope, www.hubofhope.co.uk, where you can find links to services across the UK.
Mate, that fucking hair is making me miss my hair.
What do you mean, miss your hair? You got a whole minute.
Nah, but like,
you're literally
mine was
looking
fucking
at me. You look like, I don't know.
I'm honestly jealous.
Like, it's giving me the golden age of Hollywood.
Mate, mine was down here, and I fucking got rid of it.
Why? Why'd you get rid of it?
Because I'm heading towards 40, and mine wasn't as luscious as yours. Welcome to Man Made, a podcast hosted by me, Pete Wicks, where we talk all things men. This week's guest is Sam Ryder, an amazing singer-songwriter who was a Eurovision entry for the UK with Spaceman. I think it was the highest ever UK points since 1998, something like that. Incredible guy. He's actually going to be playing Wembley later on this year, and I'm really excited to meet him because he is known within the industry and anyone that I know that's met him as being the nicest man you could ever meet. So let's see. Sam, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, mate.
Honestly, it's an absolute pleasure. We don't mess around on this podcast by kind of easing you into it. So I'm going to go straight in and ask you if you think you're a good man.
Yes. Yeah, I think I'm a good man.
Didn't even think about it, which I'm really happy about.
If I thought I weren't a good man, I'd be disrespecting my parents and the way they raised me, you know?
Okay.
So that's the way I look at it.
What traits do you possess that make you a good man?
Thinking that you're a good man isn't necessarily that you believe that your job is done in your pursuit of becoming a good person, but you're aware of your shortcomings, your misgivings, your, for me, need for patience. I've got no patience for myself, for a lot of things and others around me, unfortunately, which I've been trying to work on for a long time. But I think all of us, we naturally have these things we're born with that we know are our burdens.
Yeah.
And things and pitfalls that we always seem to kind of come back to. And therefore, our life journey is often being tested on those things. If you feel like you're like that, patience is something that you struggle with. Most of the time when you get in the car, you're going to be held up in traffic, or you're going to be letting yourself run late for a train. You're going to be stuck behind a tractor or a learner, and you're going to be raging, and it will keep on testing you.
Constantly learning and adapting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Would you say that not being patient is one of your worst traits then?
I would say so, yeah.
How does it
yeah.
manifest itself?
Well, because...
Because if you're about to tell me that you're an angry man, I will die.
Well, no, actually, I think there's a lot of anger sometimes, like coming from impatience, a lot of anger towards myself, like feeling that... For example, right, this is a good way of showing you that patience is something I need to work on, because it took me till I was 31 years old to get even a little sniff or a taste of a crumb at success in music, but I'd been doing it since I was 14 years old. So there was no time in my life that I wasn't working like all hands on deck, mm-hmm. full steam ahead to try and make that goal and ambition a reality and breathe it into being and make it something that was actually manifested.
Me and Sam were talking about this, Sam Thompson, the other day when I said you were coming on. I knew about you before your kind of successful moment because of TikTok and because of digitally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I used to see loads of your fucking videos and think, my God, this guy looks like a fucking Greek god, has also got the most amazing fucking voice. So you were kind of on your rise to success through social media and all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. But then the big kind of break came. How did it feel for you getting that kind of recognition after all those years?
To be honest, mate, I kind of consider the social media part the first big break for me. Like, because I think it was like 5th of May in 2021 that I posted some videos online, and one of them just went pretty mad. I mean, that is a story seemingly as old as time now. I have no idea why. It just sort of, for me, happened in a way that was, in my life, certainly seismic. And the only thing I can attribute it to was two factors. One was that I'd finally, I think, made peace with the fact that it wasn't going to happen for me, like the way that I'd envisioned it, certainly. Yeah. So I guess there was this, like, nonchalance, almost. And then secondly, when I look back at some of those videos, I remember the intention. It was that no one's probably going to see these, but I want to look at them after I film them and think, yeah, I did a good job on that song or something like that. Because what other evidence did I have in my life to suggest that they'd do anything?
Mm-hmm.
I've had, since I was 14 years old, trying everything. And then you're telling me that I should have known it was a Britney Spears song or a Sia song in my kitchen or the corner of my shed that was going to change and move the needle.
I mean, you say it's kind of a tale as old as time, and you know, it has happened to different people, but it makes it even more beautiful when it happens to people who truly, truly deserve it.
Yeah.
But one thing I will say is that anyone that I know that has ever spent time with you gone, God, he's just the fucking nicest person. So if I was to ask you if you feel confident in your masculinity, yeah, what would you say?
I'd say not very much at the moment, actually. Funnily enough, before I kind of got any evidence or like those breadcrumbs I was mentioning before, like leading me to any kind of perception of success, I had a lot of confidence, a lot of delusion as well, which essentially is kind of confidence in its rawest form.
Yeah.
It's like when you pick coal out of the ground, it's not like you need to refine it.
Yeah.
But delusion's important because you got no money most of the time. At least I personally feel some of the best people that come up come from really being on their ass, working a job that they are desperate to get out of. That's my experience, you know, like, and it taking a long time and having to work anything you can, having your card declined in a Nando's or something like that, like after you've been on tour for 3 months. Those little things, I think they build a character and they give you a thick skin. Funnily enough, Pete, it's when you start being given things and you start noticing what a semblance of comfort actually feels like, that's when your confidence gets shaken, I think, because for the first time ever, you've got something to lose.
It changes how you go into things because you have something to lose. So how has that manifested itself with you kind of potentially losing a little bit of confidence since being more well-known? It's quite rare and nice in a way that it actually sometimes has the opposite effect.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. If I had to choose what was going on, funnily enough, I think, I mean, I would choose a middle ground personally. Where I'm at the moment isn't, like, I don't want to pull out a little violin because it's not that situation at all. And I actually...
Knowing you, you'd probably play it really fucking well as well.
just back away.
You know what I mean?
Because it's not that. And I'm interested to talk about why it's not that later on. But certainly, as you said, the other end of that spectrum is one that creates essentially a fertile ground to breed arrogance and letting your ego sort of run rampant. Believing that you have finally gotten what you deserve, I think, is a bad route to go down. There's certainly positive points that we can discuss about confidence, and I think confidence is actually amazing. I am fascinated by it as a subject, not just in music, but in sport. Like, where does it come from?
Mm-hmm.
How can it be harnessed? I think if we knew how to harness confidence, the world would be insane.
Yeah. 100%. I completely agree with that. Would you say that you're proud to be a man?
Proud is probably the wrong word. I'd steer away from that. Pridefulness in general for me is teetering in a dangerous way close to arrogance. I don't know why I feel that way. I just think it's because I was raised Catholic, I reckon. My mum would always like sort of say, don't be proud. But I get that you're not using it in that way.
It's really interesting though the way you kind of answer some of those questions, because you care a lot about other people and how other people will take what you do and what you say, which I think is a really beautiful quality to have.
It's nice to be nice, isn't it? Simple as that. Like, for me, you're being incredibly kind to say that I'm a nice person. I really, but almost feel guilty of accepting that as a compliment, because it shouldn't be.
I can
be
see it makes
compliment.
You uncomfortable. It surprises
yeah,
me.
Yeah, but because for me it shouldn't be something that's brought up, is it? Like, but I don't know, there's something I'd have to dig into, I think.
Well, don't worry, we're not going to do that today. I mean, in terms of role models, we've spoken on this podcast loads about role models, and part of the reason again that we kind of did this was because I struggled to think of any role models.
That's interesting.
But that's probably because I'm slightly fucked up, but and it's really interesting to find out the way different people have impacted on different people's lives. And you've got two. One was a geography teacher.
Yeah.
So that's in your formative years when you were mm-hmm. younger. I mean, how
yeah,
old
yeah.
were you?
Yeah, what I was age? In secondary school.
In secondary school. Yeah, so, yeah. So that really is your formative years yeah. when you're starting to become a man and starting mm-hmm. to realise kind of, you know, what the world's about and who you are in the world yeah. and kind of where your place in the world is. What was it about your geography teacher that made him kind of a role model for you?
First of all, he was called Mr. Ward, Tony Ward.
Tony Ward.
Yeah, rest in peace, Tony Ward. Died a few years ago and I've never seen a teacher's life be celebrated so much. Specifically, if you're from Essex, the school I went to was called St. John Payne, and everyone that had been to that school and since left, everyone knew about
so
it.
So he'd had a major impact on a lot of people's
lives. A lot of people, yeah, incredible man. I think he was the first person, as I was growing up, to make me realise that for you to respect someone, they don't have to try and be your friend. He was a hard teacher as well. But there was a lot of hard and strict teachers in the school I went to, but none of them commanded respect like Mr. Ward did.
And how do you think he did that?
You just knew that he knew his stuff. Like, he was incredibly skilled. And also you got a feeling that had he wanted to, he could be operating in a different level, not just at a school. And I want to say that incredibly cautiously, because I have some friends of mine that are teachers and their skill set is they could do anything with their life, but they're the most selfless people on the planet, man. Mm-hmm. Like the amount they've got to go through for what they get in return to make sure that people in their formative years are set up to just thrive and fly.
Well, I mean, we've had a lot of people who've come on this podcast and have used a teacher as their
really?
Role model.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, an awful lot of people. Cool. I think sometimes with teachers, it's the first time you respect someone because of something that they're doing or observing something they're doing, whether it be them being amazing at what they do or being incredibly knowledgeable or talented or whatever it yeah. may be.
It's like Whereas Coach Carter, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, mate, it's exactly like that. What a fucking great fucking reference
amazing.
And a great film.
It's true.
What's your biggest fear?
Yeah, everyone turns up and yeah. they want to dislike this guy. Because essentially is separating them from their friends, moving them, because you can see straight away, right, you yeah. two are going to be a problem here. So you're annoyed, but within, you know, it feels at the time like a lifetime, but yeah. in school terms, probably a few weeks, you're just enamored.
Yeah.
Because this guy, you can tell, is just passing your knowledge.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, you saying that you know, teachers is one of the most selfless things you can do. And I completely agree with, because, yeah, it is probably the first time, you know, in your formative years that someone really does have an impact on you in a way that isn't forced upon you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's no offence to kind of parents, but they are kind of forced upon you sometimes, aren't they? you can't pick another one. So for him, it was commanding respect based on the fact that he was incredibly intelligent and skilled in what he did and probably could have done something else,
yeah.
but was there yeah. and being strict, maybe.
And he also, you could see his life outside of teaching. He was an amazing long distance runner. Mm-hmm. He's an amazing skier. Like, he sorted out these trips for the school to go on, like Piancavallo would go, like, which I don't know why that place name is in my head, but it'll be there forever, to go skiing. And he, like, you can't imagine your teacher ever being good at anything outside
of
their subject.
Yeah.
But he'd be ripping, like skiing, and you'd be like, this guy's a legend.
Yeah.
Like, he's an older dude as well, like his wicked moustache. Kind of looks like, we always called him, and I'm hoping he's up there, like he'd laugh at this, but Van Pelt from Jumanji. It's kind of, he gave that energy,
yeah, yeah.
but not trying to like run around with a musket.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's good, because that would be quite strict.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If I can get that done. I mean, yeah, so again, really interesting, like I said, that people's teachers have that kind of impact. I didn't really like school. I wasn't particularly great at school, so I unsurprisingly didn't spend a lot of time there. That's for another podcast. that's why I've turned into a kind of a bum now and don't have a real job. But the other person, yeah, but the difference between you and I is you've got an incredible skill. The other person for you, James Vowell?
Yeah, James Vowell. So, just to give you a bit of background and your listeners, I'm sure a bunch of your listeners are into the sport as well, because F1's everywhere now. But he originally was part of the Braun story, which is essentially, you know, like Leicester. I don't know anything about football, basically, but Leicester winning whatever they won.
Premiership.
The cup.
Yep.
I can see your head in your hand.
Yeah.
Charity the one Shield.
Like a football game, yeah.
That great fixture.
Yeah.
But it's just against all odds. He was part of the team that achieved that. He was at Mercedes for their domination of the sport. And since then, he's moved to Williams, which is basically like going from a team that is just right up here to someone that is at the bedrock,
yeah,
really, of the sport. And because he felt that there was a time in his life that you're not testing yourself if you're succeeding. I'm not saying that Mercedes currently are in a spot where they're completely succeeding, but they're still like
still up there.
Up there at the front of the grid, you know, like in the top 3-4. But Williams is certainly a different world. And the more I hear about this guy, he has this embodiment of kindness and understanding and patience, actually. Even in the way that he talks, I can see that he has a patience for something, and I admire that. Obviously, from what we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. he knows that he's going into something by choice that's going to take years to turn around, but he knows it's possible, so he has the optimism. He has the patience, which also shows me that he has the resilience to fail, because he knows that's coming. Mm-hmm. That you're not just going to move there and turn a team around in a year. It's going to take ages. And yeah, the more I know about his story, where he came from, like studying, I think it was computer science, decided he hated it, even though he's good at it, and then the next day sent out letters to Formula One teams. 11 letters, I think it was, all of them rejected, but two of them were rejected with some pointers. But he just hung them on his wall, waited for the time that he knew would come, used everything he learned from those the two rejection letters to build himself up into a place where he could get into the sport.
Mm.
And the guy's moved mountains.
I mean, it's incredible, really, because it sounds a little bit like a story of self-belief as well.
Yeah, I admire him because of his confidence.
Yeah.
I think having confidence actually before you've succeeded is quite, not simple to minimise it, but it is, look at most people in their late teens, early 20s, we're all undeservedly confident at some point in our life, but we need it, because if you don't come from money or anything like that, what else you got?
I don't know if I've said it on the pod before. My first ever tattoo, I was 15.
South End Seafront.
Mate, that's worse than that. It was in fucking Romford.
the dogs.
I looked about fucking 35. I'm like Benjamin Button. I'm like Benjamin Button, but I'm just not getting younger. Yeah, fucking mad. I've looked about 50 since I was 12, and at some point I'll hit 50 and I'll probably just keep getting older. But it said never enough.
Yeah.
Which is a 15-year-old is quite deep. But no,
interesting that you knew that at that age, isn't it?
Yeah, well, at the time, I don't think I did. I basically, you know, I got a tattoo because I was 15. A lot of my mates were older and I wanted to be able to get in at a pub. So I thought, if I get it on my forearm, and I just, every time I go to a bouncer and just itch to see a tattoo, he's old enough, let alone the fucking beard and all the rest of it.
I bet you've had that since.
Oh, mate, I look like this at 9. It was terrible when you're having to give out fucking milk and you're like, oh, sorry, I've got milk in my beard. Fucking. But never enough, and it's kind of stayed with me, because regardless of any successes that I've ever had, there is always something that makes me want more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an educated person, but I love to fucking have a go at things, and regardless of getting to a point where you think you may have completed something, which is kind of some people's kind of end goal, and realising what you think success is. I used to think, because I wasn't educated, making money made me successful.
That was
what it was, because I didn't come from money. And then getting to a point where I'd maybe thought I'd achieved that, it meant fuck all. It was nothing.
And it's because you've set one goal that you can't see beyond it.
And
like,
that's exactly
if I have
it.
The car, you get the car, and you're like, shit, I didn't think about what happens after.
Yeah, what now what?
Yeah.
And maybe that's similar to what you're saying there, going from, you know, building something and being so successful with Mercedes at that point, and then thinking, fuck, I've still got more to give.
Yeah, you're building culture there, which isn't material.
It's not enough for me. I want more, and I want to be able to do that. And I think sometimes we as people quite often worry so much about getting to a certain destination. It's very, very cliche to say it, but that whole journey is sometimes the bit that makes you feel alive.
Yeah.
And that whole journey is sometimes the measure of who you are as a person, whether it be a man, woman, or whatever else, is because actually in those times of shit and those times of failure is when you learn the most.
Yeah.
I still want to be learning and trying to be a better person until the day I die. You know, regardless of where I'm at within my life, good or bad.
Something that I've been thinking of recently in my life, which I think could help, is you mentioned destination, which is fascinating to me, because all of us have something in common that we chase, like a destination-based ambition or goal. So whether it is like material, like you mentioned the car, or it could be even an experience. Mm-hmm. Like once I managed to move out of this country and immigrate, or you set up a life somewhere else, then yeah, then I'll be set, then I'll be successful. And so you have these kind of things that we're chasing. But I would suggest to anyone, certainly just from my experience at the moment, that I'm trying to practice in my life is chasing feeling-based destinations and goals. So instead now of chasing a metric in music or playing so-and-so or being hired for this or whatever, I just set the intention of I want to go through my life and feel fulfillment, purpose and peace. And then whatever life puts in my path as kind of touchstones along the way, amazing. Because us setting a destination, you're giving the dream no room to move.
Yeah. I literally said on this podcast the other day that the new kind of target in my life, and saying that I've realised that regardless of everything else and whatever is, you have nothing unless you have peace of mind.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
is my new destination.
Yeah, yeah.
Is to have peace of mind. And I don't know where that comes from, and it's maybe something that I may never achieve.
Yeah.
But that to me is when I can sit down and go...
Yeah, freedom from concern.
That is my kind of destination now. It's that feeling of, fuck, either I did a good job or I'm happy, I'm fulfilled. I'm content, and I don't necessarily know how to get there. And, you know, I think a lot of people will probably be the same, but I'll never stop trying. And I think that's the point, is that people quite often can become consumed with negative, and actually it makes it very hard for you to ever see the positive in life. And I think I was certainly one of them people, and that's where... but anyway, this is not about me.
I'm fascinated because some of the things you're saying, like you found it hard to find a male role model. Like, do you think that's because you've been let down by men in the past?
I think it's fucking hell, is this fucking Sam Ryder fucking man Jesus Christ, what's happened here? This is the last fucking record of the fucking series. It's been switched on me. It probably is a little bit to do with that, but also it's I think it stands to the fact that I've let myself down so much.
Yeah.
And I am a man.
Yeah.
And the people that I've had around me and the two most important to me have been women, and the stuff that I've seen them go through and the stuff that I've seen them overcome, I just think is incredible. And I don't think I'll ever be able to live up to being half the person they are. And I genuinely mean that. So one of the things that I was really excited to meet you is because you have a very similar energy to my best mate.
Okay.
It's the golden retriever thing. It's the Labrador thing, which I'm sure you've heard a fucking million times. How does it make you feel to be kind of called that or people
mate,
to find? Because your energy is infectious. And I think that's really what Labrador energy means to me. I mean, I recently literally saw a video of you on a fucking train. I think it was going to Glasgow.
Yeah.
Fucking just singing with a fucking guitar to a bunch of strangers. And it's that kind of like, fuck, I want to be around this guy.
Yeah, that was fun. I'm definitely aware of it. People have told me it before. I find it funny. I think I've kind of always been like that since I was a kid. Even like my tutors in college would always sort of like remark upon it. I think I'm stoked to know that my work is in music. I'm stoked that I'm surrounded by people that I love and that I trust, and that we know that there's a mutual understanding and real deep concern for each other's well-being. I think that the golden retriever thing is absolutely fine as long as we don't use it to mask what's going on, because you know the biggest noise can sometimes be made to kind of hide what's going on behind the curtain, because I'm certainly not one emotion, you know, like I the same as every single other person. All of us, we go through the ups and the downs of the full spectrum of what life throws, but I certainly have a resilience and an optimism that I'm very thankful for, that I was raised to have by my parents. And that kind of has given the what we'd call golden retriever energy, I think. But also just sitting here, I'm certainly not in that, I guess, mode.
No.
Like I genuinely get excited to chat with people and have the opportunity to get to know people. And also, man, just be reminded of the nice things in the world. Because right now, if I go on my phone, sit on the tube after this, I'm going to be reminded of what's bad in the world quite quickly. So I've noticed the last bastion of being reminded of how lovely and kind and light the world is oftentimes in the real world, passing strangers or meeting people, I don't know, even just at Silverstone, like hanging out with some of the marshals that I get to see like once for 15 seconds every year, chat, catch up very quickly, passing by, and everyone's just buzzing and happy. And that reminds me that the world is nice because that's the real world.
I'm probably the opposite of the golden retriever type thing, mm-hmm. which is what kind of Sam always says. I'm black cat.
Dark and stormy. Yeah.
And quite pessimistic a lot of the time, and the majority of life is fucking shite. But within that are really beautiful moments.
That isn't a bad thing.
I think that's kind of the way I see it, is I'm working from one beautiful moment to the other, and these beautiful moments aren't necessarily achievements or whatever else. Mm-hmm. It's the time that you do kind of sit and something surprises you. You know, I had a conversation with an old lady the other day, really, really randomly, who we were literally just waiting in a queue for something. And it made me smile for fucking days and days and days, because she was just such a sweet, sweet lady. And like, I get to work with dogs on a daily basis, and every day I do it just makes me so fucking happy.
Yeah.
And it's those beautiful moments that remind us. And I think it's really important for people to cherish and understand those beautiful moments, because they do help you through the dark times, whatever that may be.
Don't sound like a pessimist to me, mate.
Yeah, well, I'm getting happier in my old age, funnily enough.
You're real Benjamin Button.
Literally. You mentioned it there, is it that kind of golden retriever, Labrador energy can mask things. Have you ever used it before to mask things, you know, in times where, you know, you may not be feeling the best? Have you ever kind of used that as a thing?
Not ever in an interview setting or a public situation,
in your personal life, for me,
which sometimes would then make me feel guilty of the way I could be in a public situation, if that makes sense. So
do you feel a pressure to be an entertainer and to kind of be this idea of what people
feel? Because in 2022, when all the sort, it was kind of kicking off more in the public eye for me, I noticed people kept saying the same thing about positivity and using these words. I feel so cringy saying it, because almost I feel that if I say it, I'm like, oh, they noticed I'm this and this, which I don't subscribe to that. Again, that for me is almost like using pride and bringing that in, and that's what I'm talking about, the negative aspect of pride. But you understand, I'm sure your listeners understand like what I'm trying to like articulate.
Some of them are quite quick, some of them are really stupid.
But that's getting cut.
Do you know what? It probably fucking won't, and they'll love it. It's weird. Do you know what's so weird is people love people taking the piss. It's fucking mental.
No, I love it. But yeah, I noticed that there was maybe a pressure for me to be that one thing all the time.
Well, especially during that period, if you look at, 2021, 2022, it was kind of COVID, after the COVID thing.
We wanted to be happy, man.
During that period, you gave so much light to people.
I found that time incredibly unifying, you know. I know, don't get me wrong, there was a lot of darkness going on in the world at that point, but it certainly, here at home, it felt like the country was under common cause. We had all these things that kind of reminded us that we were in this as a collective.
Yeah.
And we have to remember stuff like that, because certainly in the UK, I'm incredibly, if we're going to use the word proud again, proud to have been born here. Yeah. I love living here. I love that I was born here. And I love that the fact that even though we have this leaning to have that stoicism and stiff upper lip, that gives way almost to kind of what you're saying, that you feel your attitude is, that when something good does start to happen, when we let ourselves be open and let our sort of, I don't know, heart just be worn on our sleeve for a split second. Happens in football all the time, innit? Like when we dare to think.
Yeah, because you're a big football fan, you know a lot about it, you remember? Fan, yeah.
You know? But, you know, even a football dullard like me can see, like when we're all watching the World Cup, daring to hope. But we never go into it hoping.
No.
We're always quite pessimistic. But when we're showing evidence that we can dream, like the UK is unmatched almost in that. Like we let ourselves completely be absorbed in the idea that this could happen.
And it's a really interesting point, because I think a lot of young men now don't dream.
and don't feel like they can dream and don't have an opportunity or a space or a safe space to dream.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think it's a tough one. I think social media is one of the greatest inventions ever because it does bring people together. But also I think it isolates a lot of people.
Yeah, we're in a different age of it now, though. We're in the dawn
dangerous
of it
age.
Becoming like we're seeing for the first time not just user-generated content, AI-generated content and AI-generated music.
That scares the shit out of me.
Well, it's interesting, but there's fantastic things that... that we're going to be able to use AI for as tools. It's like similar to in music when the drum machine got invented. Everyone was losing their heads thinking drummers are out of work forever. This is the end.
Yeah.
You know, but of course we found a way to like use the drum machine as a tool to make records that never would have existed.
Yeah.
Think of Madonna's catalogue, for example, wouldn't have existed without a lot of that stuff. So, but we're
I'm really up with Madonna's catalogue.
Madonna and football, mate. But yeah, we're entering this new dawn where there's a lot of fear surrounding it, but certainly not without just cause. I see a lot of pessimism online at the moment, a lot of negativity.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the problem where people are slightly stifled is because what you see is everyone's successes and everyone's fucking wonderful lives and all these people doing amazing fucking things is that when you don't feel that yourself and you're constantly seeing it around you, I think what that creates is people to be consumed by a feeling of never being enough.
Do you know what's class? It's all bullshit. Funnily enough, when you mentioned about the train earlier, right? When I was singing on that train, we pre-planned this thing with a bunch of fans to come down who were going to Glastonbury, and we'd meet, literally meet in Jay Carriage at so-and-so time if you're going to Glastonbury, bring a bunch of Thatchers and we'll sing some songs together. So it was just meant to be this like greener climate initiative thing, like using social media to create connection in real life.
Yeah.
That's what we did. And I think that I had no idea how far and wide that video went until I was in Glastonbury and people just coming up to me going, saw you on the train on the way. I was like, fucking hell, I had no idea, like everyone.
Mate, it went everywhere.
It was amazing fun. Didn't think anything of it when we left the train. I'm thinking of the set on Sunday, you know. And then my my partner was going, do us a favour, Sam. I know you don't usually like read the comments, just don't read anything. I was like, what do you mean? What's going on? Is it, what's the temperature of it? Because I tend to steer clear of that, like reading that sort of stuff. And she went, polarising. And I was like, why? Like, because I think a lot of people got the impression it was like taking up the public space. Or like, you know, when people kind of play on a commuter train. And I get it, because in this day and age, that sort of content or just action is for me a little bit selfish. Now people are like, I kind of just want to chill on my way to work or something. So people got the impression it was that. And of course it wasn't. But from what I was told of how bad some of this was online, I wouldn't have had a clue, because every single person I met, which, mate, I haven't noticed people remarking on something in real life as much since maybe Eurovision.
Yeah.
And everyone was just sick, just like you just did at the beginning. It looked sick. And I was like, cool, man, it's wicked.
The saddest thing.
It doesn't exist. That world isn't real.
No.
It doesn't even come to you. So why put currency in it? Why put your weight, your validation there?
That's kind of the saddest thing, though, is that social media has become a place that gives a voice to people that want to create negativity. You know, it's very easy for younger people, as I was saying with the social media, to jump on a bandwagon of negativity because it gives them a place where they feel like they're part of something.
Yeah,
it is a sad situation. I do feel for kind of the youth of today having to kind of deal with that as well, because I didn't have that when I was
MSN,
younger. Social media, mate. Yeah, we had fucking MSN and fucking
key stage one of the internet.
Mate, it was what was the fucking MySpace was the all we had really, and you just have to put a bio. And I think I just put in, I can't remember. Choose your little song, fucking go over the top. Mine, I can guarantee you, was some sort of depressing fucking thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a mad old world.
Check it once a day. It's like your mailbox.
Yeah, mate. I think Sunday nights was when I used to just
get on the family desktop.
Whereas now everything is so instant and so accessible and whatever else. There's a lot of avenues for people to go down that cause more harm than necessarily good. And it takes people to kind of speak out and try and do their best to give people a platform.
Yeah.
Who have got something that is positive to say and something, and you're certainly one of those people. One of the things that I think I've noticed throughout this conversation that we've had is you seem to be
like incredibly grateful for everything. And I think that's such a beautiful fucking attitude to have.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Gratitude is, I'd say, the biggest cornerstone of my life, because I know what it is to be in the dollar menu drive-through every night in the back of a transit van or like an old LDV post van, driving around the UK, Europe, touring South America. Like I said, we were in Russia at one point, and you're just, I can't explain how skint you are, that you're just, it's show to show, but the show isn't even promised, essentially. You get there might be no one there. They see the back wall of the venue more times than you see actual people, you know, and doing that seemingly a lifetime to then, I remember when I was mentioning earlier, like card getting declined, I remember coming off that tour, I was probably in my just past mid-20s, just when delusion starts to wear thin for other people around you, you know what I mean? Like, it's cute for a while. But that's usually the time where, oh, you're still doing that. Yeah, it's that.
It's gonna get a real job.
It's people's heads, instead when they ask you, instead of their head being straight, they go like this. And that's a very important watershed moment. And at the end of all this touring, I remember being in a Nando's trying to buy a wrap, and my card was declined. I was just breaking point. I was like, I've got nothing. Literally Ian Bill meme.
Like, I've got nothing left.
Yeah, and then I just went to work with my dad in construction. I was already sort of doing it before, but between touring, you know, he just let me sort of do as much work labouring with some of his mates and just earning money to go on tour, spend it all.
Was there a point then when you thought it's never going to happen?
Oh, yeah, lockdown. When lockdown hit, all the weddings that I was singing at, because I'd sort of moved into doing that as well as like writing my own music. I loved singing at weddings. So much fun. Best people watching ever. And I was lucky enough to play for some of the best brides and grooms. It was so lovely. And I wouldn't be sitting here chatting to you or having done anything that I've been lucky enough to achieve without those weddings, because that's where I really learned to sing. But yeah, that all gets cancelled. And then you're just thinking, I've turned 31. I think the train ain't going where I thought it was going to go, you know? So when it did, it's no wonder to me why people are like, oh, this guy is like buzzing and positive. Of course I fucking am. Like, I didn't think I'd get here. All of a sudden, you're living off breadcrumbs and following a trail like Hansel and Gretel that's splitting in loads of directions to dead ends or to pits with spikes in it, like booby traps or whatever. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you get a massive loaf of Hovis just like drop in your lap. It's crazy, mate. I can't explain it. And yeah, that is going to be outwardly manifested as nothing but pure gratitude. And I will do whatever I can with the privilege that has like inexplicably found its way to me to try and help other people that are in that position, because I know there's plenty of people that are mad talented that haven't had that opportunity.
Well, I've absolutely loved talking to you, but I've got two last things to kind of say. And the first one being is that you are like insanely talented, and as much as you won't talk about it, you deserve every piece of success that you have from there. But also, having spent time with you for the kind of past hour, one of the things that I think genuinely makes you a really, really special person is that you transfer energy by being who you are, and your ethos of being grateful, and you know, the way you speak so eloquently, the more you do that, the better that is for so many other people, because you're bringing so much light to other people by doing that. I mean, you have done with me today within a kind of an hour of speaking to you. So actually, you know, as much as you are a fabulous singer, another talent you have is that you're a light in the life of other people. So fucking, I commend you on that, brother. And I genuinely mean that.
I really appreciate the time and chatting with you.
We're not quite done yet. because this whole podcast, it kind of always ends in the same way. And when I ask people, what kind of two traits do you think make a man?
Yeah.
One of yours is gratitude.
Yeah.
And the second one is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Why empathy?
Ultimately, for me, in this game that we're in, empathy personified is using your presence to encourage instead of impress. But to talk about the real world scenario of empathy, it almost doesn't need explaining. It's, again, I think it reveals itself in patience for each other, which I'm in the pursuit of.
I mean, you've patiently sat and listened to me for a fucking hour, so you've done well.
It's kindness to yourself, which will then hopefully bring confidence into your life and self-esteem, which again is something I'm working on. But I'm inspired constantly by seeing empathy in action from other people. This got me to where I am, and I would pay it back in kind by using it along with gratitude as the main things I try and bring into the time that I have, you know.
Mate, I love that. I genuinely do. I think you speak so well on this subject, but just generally. The last thing I'm going to ask you is, and it might be a tough one, but what are you most grateful for?
That's hard to answer, because even just, I don't know, we have our concerns and we don't want to minimise them, because concerns are concerns. Mm. They cause stress, and we all know that feeling. But you can't help but imagine really a world which does exist in different countries going on right now,
yeah,
where those concerns are far different to our concerns.
We're incredibly blessed.
God willing, going home after this, going to get home safe, and there'll be a roof over my head and some food on the table. And that, for me, is a freedom of concern. Massively. That covers your, not just basic needs, but just needs. Mm-hmm. They are met. So I'm very aware, talking about those things, that there's a lot of people out there that those needs are not met, not even close. So it's a privilege to talk about them. Mm-hmm. And even to talk about our goals and ambitions, how fucking lucky. Okay. That's why it's so important to use whatever kind of privilege you have to try and use it to light up and make the world easier for other people.
Mate, I love that.
I know it's the way I'm articulating it could just sound airy-fairy and wafty, no, but sometimes those obvious things are just...
But you know the reason why it doesn't sound kind of airy-fairy and a load of bollocks is because you say it with passion and authenticity, so it does mean something.
Yeah, well, God bless.
Sam Ryder lived up to the expectation of being the nicest man you could ever meet, but they didn't tell me how fabulous his hair was. Honestly, makes me very, very jealous. But above all of that, not only is he an incredibly talented singer and songwriter, but also I think one of his main talents, which I said to him, was the fact that he just brings light into every room that he goes into. Really eloquent, really beautiful the way he speaks. And I love the fact that he's kind of main cornerstone of life, as he put it, is gratitude.
Honestly, is this called Man-Made Minute, this bit?
This, yeah.
You got to get someone to do a little stink, like that jingle.
Is that an offer?
Man-Made Minute.
We need it. We've got series two coming.
I can see a guitar from where I'm stood.
Is it Don Henley that's on the New York Minute? I can't remember.
Yes.
Hey, that would be class. In a
man-made minute. We might call on you for a little bit of this. God, fuck me. This is when I know I've made it, when I've got a jingle.
Yeah, I've got
a jingle. Right.
Yep.
This is Man-Made Minute with Sam Ryder. Well, I'm going to ask you some questions. I just want quick fire.
Yep.
All right? Don't think about it. The first thing that comes into your head. When something goes wrong, who do you call?
My mum.
What's more important, being well-groomed or punctual?
Punctual.
Writing music or performing live?
Performing live.
How long do you spend getting ready in the morning?
Showers, 25 minutes. Bit of moisture. Oh, that's meant to be quick fire, isn't it? Hour.
An hour?
Yeah.
Is that mostly on the hair? It's fucking great hair. It really makes me jealous. I hate it. What do you think when you look in the mirror?
Get your beard shorter.
What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Plough your own furrow.
Ooh, I like it. When did you last cry?
Last cry? Recently, actually. Probably a week ago. On my birthday, actually.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I got a card from my mum. It didn't even say anything emotional. I just opened it up, cried my eyes out. It's just one of those times, you know, you're just like...
You're just on the edge and you needed a release.
A bit hard on yourself, and you just realise there's people out there that don't give a shit about anything else. They just love you, care about you. And it just hit me, man. It made me realise... I know it's meant to be quickfire, but made me realise that golden age of life right there, sitting next to your mum, opening a birthday card from her. Can't beat it.
Fucking love that.
Yeah.
Tough exterior or open book?
Open book.
And lastly, and this is two words, what makes a good man?
Empathy and gratitude.
I fucking love it. What a guy. Next week is the 12th and final episode of this series, which has flown by. And there's only one man that I could get for the final episode. It's someone that I think everyone expected me to have at some point. And it will be Sam Thompson. So it'll be interesting to see what he's got to actually say. It's going to be fun for you all to see the bits of Sam that I see on a daily basis. So I'm really looking forward to it.